Ever get that sinking feeling when a stock tip goes south? You know, you lose money and you think, well, someone gave me bad advice, but proving that in court, yeah, that's a whole other beast, especially when we're talking about securities fraud and good old Rule 10b-5.
Right. You'd think it's simple, but it's not. It's not just about showing you lost money. It's about this thing called loss causation. And, well, it can be tricky.
Tricky is putting it lightly. Today, we're going deep on loss causation and why it trips up so many investors.
And for that, we're going all the way back to 2005 with a case that kind of set the standard, Lentell v. Merrill Lynch. It's a Second Circuit decision that's, well, it's pretty much the blueprint for how courts look at whether a bad stock tip actually caused an investor to, well, lose their shirt.
So before we get lost in legal jargon, let's paint a picture for everyone. What exactly went down back then that led to this landmark case?
Okay, picture this, the dot-com boom, right? Late 90s, early 2000s, everyone's going crazy for internet stocks. It's a wild ride, and then bam, the bubble bursts. And that's where our story starts with Merrill Lynch, a big-time investment firm, and a few of their analysts, most famously, Henry Blodgett.
Henry Blodgett, the poster child for dot-com optimism.
Yeah, that's the guy. So publicly, these analysts are pumping up internet stocks left and right, slapping buy ratings on everything. 247 Media, Interliant, you name it.
Bye, bye, bye. I bet everyone's feeling pretty good back then, at least for a little while.
Until it all came crashing down.
Yeah.
And here's the kicker. Behind the scenes, things weren't as rosy as they seemed. Later on, investigations, including a big one by the New York Attorney General, revealed that those public buy ratings didn't quite match what the analysts were saying in private.
Oh, I smell trouble brewing.
Big time. Internal emails surfaced, and it turns out these analysts were calling some of these stocks dogs, even powder kegs. Not exactly glowing endorsements. The allegation was that these buy ratings were less about genuine belief in the companies and more about keeping them happy and securing their investment banking business.
Classic conflict of interest, huh? So the dot-com bubble bursts. Stocks like 247 Media and Interliant tank, and investors, well, they lose a ton of money.
Tons. And they're understandably furious. They feel misled, tricked by those glowing buy recommendations. So what do? They sue Merrill Lynch.
Makes sense. They're looking for someone to hold accountable. What was the legal basis for their lawsuit?
They went after Merrill Lynch under Section 10B of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. It's a big one, basically saying you can't be manipulative or deceptive when it comes to buying or selling securities. Their argument was that those buy ratings were artificially inflated, not reflecting what the analysts truly thought, and that they lost money as a result.
So you've got investors who are out big bucks, they're pointing the finger at Merrill Lynch, and they've got a solid legal argument. Seems like an open and shut case, right?
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But here's the twist. The court actually dismissed the case.
Dismissed it. Why? What went wrong?
The plaintiffs stumbled on a concept called loss causation. That's our star of the show today. Loss causation is all about proving that the defendant's actions, their misleading statements or omissions, directly caused the economic harm the plaintiff suffered. It's not enough to just show that you lost money after someone said something misleading. You have to prove the lie itself, the misrepresentation, was the actual cause of the loss.
So it's not enough to just say, hey, I bought this stock based on a buy rating and now it's worthless. You need to show more than that.
Exactly. You need a direct link between the misleading statement and the reason the stock price went down.
So what did the judge in the Lentell case have to say about loss causation? What were the key takeaways?
Well, Judge Jacobs laid out a few really important principles. The first one is all about concealed risk materialization. The court basically said, look, for this to work, you need to prove that the alleged fraud, the misleading statement, actually hid a specific risk from the investors. And that's not all. It has to be the realization of that hidden risk, the truth coming out, that directly caused their losses. It's not just about any bad thing happening later on. It's got to be tied to what was specifically concealed.
I'm starting to see how tricky this can get. So let's say the analysts knew there was a problem with the company's technology, but they pushed buy anyway, right? Then that problem becomes public knowledge and the stock plummets. That would be a concealed risk materializing, right?
Exactly. The negative event, the stock drop, has to be directly linked to what the misleading statement was trying to hide. It's about connecting those dots.
Okay, that makes sense. What was the next big point from Lentell?
The court also talked about the importance of a corrective disclosure. They noticed that in this case, there wasn't a clear moment where the truth about the misleading buy ratings came out and the stock price tanked because of it. It's not enough to just say the stock price went down after the fact. You have to show that the market reacted specifically to the revelation of the fraud.
So a stock can go down for all sorts of reasons.
Oh, absolutely. It could be a general market downturn, bad news about the industry, who knows. But unless you can pinpoint the drop to the moment the market learned about the misleading buy rating, it's hard to prove loss causation.
So even if the analysts had doubts about the stock and it later crashes, that doesn't automatically mean they caused the loss.
Nope. The court's like, hold on, there's more to it than that. And this brings us to another big principle, the idea of proximate cause.
Proximate cause. Lay it on us.
Basically, proximate cause means the losses have to be a direct result of the fraud, not because of some other random event or general economic downturn. It's got to be foreseeable. And in Lentell, there was an interesting wrinkle.
Oh, what's that?
The court pointed out that even with those rosy buy recommendations, Merrill Lynch also included those standard risk disclosures in their reports. You know, the ones that say investing is risky, especially in volatile sectors like the dot-com world.
Ah, those disclaimers we all scroll past.
Right, but they matter. The court basically said that those disclosures, which warned investors about the inherent risks, actually lined up with what happened. The losses were due to those disclosed risks, the volatility of the market, not because of some hidden risk that Merrill Lynch was keeping secret.
Interesting. So if a company warns you, hey, this internet stock is a gamble, and then the whole internet sector tanks, you can't really turn around and blame them for your losses, right?
Exactly. You were warned. And this ties into something called the Bespeaks Caution Doctrine.
I've heard of that. Can you remind us how it works?
Sure. The Bespeaks Caution Doctrine basically says if a company gives you enough warnings, enough cautionary language alongside their recommendations, those warnings can actually outweigh any overly optimistic statements. In Lentell, because Merrill Lynch had those risk disclosures, the court basically said, look, the investors were on notice. They knew this was risky. So they couldn't really claim that their losses came from a hidden risk when the company had already pointed out the exact kind of risk that ended up happening.
It's like the fine print actually matters in this case.
More than you'd think. And all of this highlights something called the pleading burden for the plaintiffs in these kinds of cases.
Pleading burden. Sounds intimidating. What does that mean?
It's all about what the plaintiffs have to include in their initial complaint, the document that kicks off the lawsuit. Lentell basically said, you can't just vaguely say you lost money because of a misleading statement. You need to show exactly how the fraud, the revelation of the truth, caused the stock to drop. You have to paint a clear picture and connect the dots.
So you need dates, specific events, the whole timeline of how the news impacted the stock price.
Pretty much. You have to show the market reacted specifically to the revelation of the alleged fraud, not just to any random bad news. That's a high bar to clear.
Wow, I see why loss causation is such a stumbling block. And all of this is separate from what's called transaction causation, right?
That's right. Transaction causation, or reliance, is all about proving that the investor relied on the misrepresentation when they made the decision to buy the stock. Did they buy it because of the misleading buy rating? Lentell focused mainly on loss causation, but it's important to remember they're both important elements in these cases.
So even if you can prove you bought the stock because of the buy rating, that's still not enough. You still need to prove the lie itself is what made you lose money.
Bingo. Two hurdles to clear.
So Lentell really shook things up. What are the lasting impacts of this case, especially for legal eagles and, well, anyone thinking about investing in the stock market?
Lentell was a game changer. It set the standard for how courts in the Second Circuit and many others analyze loss causation. For lawyers, it's a reminder that a drop in stock price alone isn't enough. You need that clear, direct link between the revelation of the lie and the loss. And those risk disclosures, they can be a huge defense.
Read the fine print, as they say.
It's not just a saying, it's the law.
So what's the big takeaway, the fundamental principle about loss causation that Lentell hammered home?
It's all about the zone of risk. To prove loss causation, the lie, the misstatement, has to have hidden a specific risk. Then when that risk comes to light, it has to be the thing that makes the stock price tank. The loss has to fall squarely within that zone of risk created by the misleading statement. If the loss can be explained by something else, like a general market crash or a risk the company did disclose, then loss causation is probably going to fail.
So listeners, here's the bottom line. If you lose money in the stock market because of a misleading statement, you can't just point fingers and yell fraud. You need to connect the dots. Explain exactly why you lost money because of that specific lie.
It's about the why.
And speaking of why, Here's a final thought for everyone. Think about today's world. Information spreads like wildfire online right away. We've got social media, algorithms making trades in milliseconds. It's a whole new ballgame. How do the principles of loss causation, those rules from Lentell, apply in this crazy fast-paced environment? It's a tough question and something worth pondering.
It really makes you think about the challenges investors face in proving loss causation today. The landscape has definitely shifted.
Well, on that note, thanks for joining us for this deep dive into loss causation and the legacy of Lentell. Until next time.